Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
And we ought not to overlook the flight of the birds. Oh, wow. We didn't have it last year, and I, for one, missed it desperately. And I know your wife missed the children dressed in feathers and such.
I am fond of it.
It's fun. Gotta remember, it's fun.
This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to FilmSack. This is FilmSack, mining the very depths of film entertainment since back in 2009. Mm. And for all mankind. Hi, I'm Scott Johnson. Today is episode 353, and I'm joined by Brian. I think the pianist might be Special Dunaway.
Oh, he's so special. Oh, hi. Fellow village sackers. What manner of spectacle has attracted your attention so splendidly? To carry in my pocket to help me sack. And to do other pocket things. Mm. Who came upon this? Randy, did you inappropriately fondle this Shyamalan? Who has done this heinous act? Scott Ibbett? The movie we do not speak of has not breached our borders in many years. For some, never. We do not go into its plot holes. And it does not come to our homes and give us face spankings. Like that one scene where Adrian Brody took a nasty... slaps to the face to a spanking. That is a face thirsty for slaps, I'm telling you. It's a truce. Yet, here we are, sacks in hand. We are grateful for the time we have been given.
Yeah. Very nice.
Randy, read us your notes.
All right. So far, if I was coming into this cold, I still wouldn't know what the movie is. I like this. I'm enjoying this. Up next, we have Randy. Careful, you're holding the bad color, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott, Brian.
Hi.
Randy.
My thanks belongs to you folk for this manner of spectacle in which we are speaking on our recent shared experiences, receiving a great bounty of entertainment. Why Elder Dunaway hath bemoaned the length of the experience, and Elder Ibbett did so humorously, and you know how much we require such levities here, given our broken and tragic histories, but I shall not belabor this exercise, for it is Scott Forth Johnson Smithson's turn to lead us in further dedications. The end.
I was so glad you did the note reading thing.
That was perfect. This is almost like you guys planned that. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what's even crazier than that? When that lady stood up and went, "Who wrote this note?"
Yeah. She likes to do that.
What do you think?
There's 40 people in the whole world, exactly. And they're all in the room.
Yeah,
exactly.
They're all right
there.
I think
it was somebody in this room.
Every night's a murder mystery night at that place. With us finally, Brian, nice rat suit, Ibbett.
Oh, it sure was. This is Fly Tower to American Airlines 639er. You're heading towards a no-fly zone. Over. Oh, you're a new pilot to these parts, you say? Oh, okay, let me break it down. You've got that animal preserve in about heading 190. That's owned by some eccentric billionaire that wanted to ensure some privacy, so he pays us excessive amounts of money to keep our planes from flying over it. Over. Yes, well, it also means we can't fly closer than 100 miles in any direction because they'd pretty much be able to see our planes in the distance, too. Over. No, won't be forever. Well, the way I figure it, we've only got one more generation before the whole gene pool starts to fold over itself like an origami pterodactyl. Over.
Love it.
That's pretty good. And, you know, I hadn't even thought about how they were going to... I mean, because they started with, what, six couples, five couples, and then...
They started with four couples, and there's like 80 people there. And I'm like, how many kids did they have?
That's pretty weird.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like that. One of them was Zuckerberg or a freaking.
Eisenberg.
Yeah. I keep saying Zuckerberg. Stumper. He played Zuckerberg in that
he
movie.
Played Zuckerberg. Eisenberg played Zuckerberg.
Sure, as always.
He was the stump stander.
Right.
He totally was. He didn't do much in this movie, but I guess back in. Whatever year this was, we didn't know him very well.
2004.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He was new. It's The Village, everybody. M. Night Shyamalan's The Village, his follow-up to Signs, the last good movie he did until Splice. What? Or what? Not Slice. What is it? Slip, Slap, Slippy, Slicey?
It's split personalities.
Yeah. Right.
And right. I disagree with your assessment. This was the last good movie before then.
Well, explain. Yeah, I would agree. Okay, what's the other one? Oh, the elevator deal.
Well, elevator deal is really enjoyable, but I'm going to argue that people probably should appreciate Lady in the Water more than it's appreciated.
Was that after this?
Such a slog, man. Lady in the Water felt like.
And what was this you enjoyed, Ibbot, this week? What did you enjoy this week's banquet?
You know, I'm not going to argue. It felt like less of a slog than Lady in the Water. Lady in the Water just felt so slow and underpaced. This at least, you know, the first time you see it, you go, oh, wow, I'm so shocked. And then the second time, it's like, okay, well, let me start piecing these things together. Well, how come this happens? Yeah, oh, and how come this happens?
I could explain the entirety of Lady in the Water in like two sentences.
Mm-hmm. Sweet.
And a movie like Unbreakable or The Village, it's got a lot to unpack, right? You can't just explain. Like, yeah, Lady in the Water would have been a fine little short film.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes that's what his movies feel like to me. Again, the post-Signs ones, they all feel like short film experiences, and they're just too long for that.
Considering this is only an hour and 48 minutes, I swear people always say it's like 2.5 hours. No, it's just an hour and 48.
It really isn't that long.
Totally feels like it.
Yeah.
So are we saying
the problem is the good part of The Village is the first hour five.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't
know. Right hour in, yeah.
And then the last 40 minutes are just bad, and you can't, like... It's okay if the last 10 minutes are bad, right? You might feel like, okay, well, at least that's over. But when the good part ends and you still have most of an hour to go.
I'd like to take umbrage with that.
What is the turn for the bad time? Like, when does it, turn?
When Ron Howard's daughter is shown the suits. That's
agreed.
Up to that point, up to that point, it's a great film.
Let's back that truck up and park it. I don't think this is ever a good movie. I think this is a bad movie from top to bottom. Now, I need to make a disclaimer here that the movie I saw before this was perhaps my tied for second favorite movie of all time. Blade Runner 2049. I freaking loved it.
So it begins, people.
Yeah, this is this.
Remember Mad Max? This is going to be even worse.
Everyone remember this moment because this is when it starts. I loved that movie. I think it's a modern classic. I can't say enough about it. So there's a problem when you see that and then you roll into shit called The Village.
On.
Dude,
oh,
The
look,
Village
look.
Is bad. And
you
look,
can't
I can't
say, okay, you're going to have to define for me. What facet? Because this movie is many facets, and you
all
cannot
the
tell me
all
that
facets.
The visuals are not beautiful. You cannot tell me that the music is not beautiful.
No,
you
can't
tell
you this.
Some of the scenes are greatly acted. You can't tell me a lot of that stuff, so it's got to be something else. What makes this movie
The only one I agreed with you on there is the music. I actually think the music's great. It's really good. It's what's-his-name, Howard.
You didn't think
again.
It was beautiful?
Oh, it was lovely. It was great. I loved it.
Beautifully shot. Yeah.
No, you mean the film itself?
Yes.
There's a bunch of stuff in this film that shows you just what a great cinematographer M. Night Shyamalan is. Like he has this sense for what you put in a shot and where you put it that's just amazing. Like it, instead of films, I realized I've gotten really used to movies where the cinematography is you take a bunch of shots of different things and then you use the ones that end up being really good. Whereas this is like every shot you're looking in a window, you're looking across a porch, you have these things like it was constructed almost like they set a camera down and then went and made the shot out in front of it. Like we're going to erect a bell and we're going to put it on top of a plinth right
just
out here.
So that we can, just so that we can shoot around it.
Yeah. We're going to carve a trail. Like I was just, it reminded me of, I hate to say this. It reminded me of early Spielberg and
I tell you, in a time of chimpanzees as well as a monkey. In a time when so many movies are shot so quickly and we have so much Steadicam stuff going on, having a long stationary shot is just so refreshing for me.
Yeah. You'd like Blade Runner for that reason, by the way. There's lots of those.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead.
There's a whole lot of that.
I feel like I will.
I think I'm on Team Dunaway on this one. I certainly don't think it's his best film, and I don't think it's a fantastic film. I think there are a few things to like about this, and you really have to separate, if you can, the implausibility of the premise from the rest of the film, because the stuff where Ivy is making her way towards her discovery, I think is fantastic. I think Bryce Dallas Hardware did a really good job. Bryce Dallas Hardware. I don't know why I was going to say that, but I decided to just run with it. But you know, the scenes where she's making her way through the woods and comes across Brody in a bird costume.
Uh-huh. Who has voice modulation like a monster? I don't understand how that was possible.
That's perception. It's supposed to be filmed from her perspective, and it's supposed to be perception. Yeah,
sure. Right. Yeah. So she's blind, so she hears things that you don't hear. Blah blah blah.
Yeah, yeah. But then when the whole village and they're not all blind are hearing it all the time at night. I mean, come on.
Adrian Brody's character, Noah, thinks it's hilarious because he knows the secret. And you think he's laughing because he's insane, which he is and deserves a face slapping. However, he's laughing because he knows. He knows it's just the parents messing around or the elders messing around.
And that's my point about the last 45 minutes kind of betraying the rest of the movie. Because when you start finding out those things, it's too late for you, the viewer, to go back and say, "Oh, that was clever." Instead, you're like, "Oh, okay."
I've struggled with this movie many times because I like the Shyamalan twist that he usually does on movies. However, I had never cared for this one, and I think I'm still trying to hammer down the reason. But I think it's because in most of the other movies, there's a air of supernatural. And they never remove the supernatural, and they go all the way through, and they keep it. In this one, they strip away the supernatural as the twist, and then it's just normal living. And it's kind of like Scooby-Doo, because you unveil, and it's like, oh, it's just Walker. But at least in Scooby-Doo, you still have a talking dog, so there's at least some magic going on.
And that's kind of where the biggest problem I have with it. I mean, there's the implausibility of them not ever seeing a helicopter that happens to be doing traffic over there on the I-19 or whatever, or a plane off in the distance. It's the fact that William Hurt's character says, "Oh, I want to get away from the horrors of life." Right. By secluding my family and all these other families in this nature preserve and never leaving it, and then introducing my own horrors to keep them in line.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Which is what we're supposed to be talking about, right? The movie challenges you to talk about that whole thing about broken people and what they do to try to get by, how they deal with their grief.
Sure.
And then what that becomes when they have their own children, blah, blah, blah. And unfortunately, we have all these expectations for this film. You know, like we expect it to have the sensibility of Unbreakable or the first one. And you know, like one of the first things you said of it was that you were focused on the implausibilities. And I'm thinking, well, you know, if a movie's great, like La La Land was implausible, Arrival was implausible, but if a movie's great, you know, you don't care. right? Mm-hmm. You're busy. Mm-hmm. Enjoying
you're busy enjoying the amazing film. Exactly.
Yeah.
This so, I mean, you're all making pretty decent points. I stayed completely unspoiled on this movie and have never seen it.
That's
so
amazing.
That's which, great.
Yeah. I'd never been told what the twist was. I had no idea.
When you got to the twist,
I went, oh,
which twist,
shit.
By the way, there's about 5 redirects of the story,
right,
and there's really no big twist. There's the first twist is
when you find out that William Hurt is, you know, knows more than he knows and is like, and is manipulating the situation. I think
sure,
that's the first
but it's
twist.
A time. Those are dumb twists. The twist it's elephant in the room. We're living in modern day. This isn't in 1820. Like, that's right. The twist. So, that being the twist, I was just annoyed by it. It just annoyed me because what it told me was these people that thought this was a good idea, they're huge dicks. They're just living this giant lie.
Like they're broken. They're so badly injured that they they don't even realize that they're perpetrating this horror on their
I guess so, because they've got all these children, these different generations now that are all like living in what they think is this ancient time. And
1890s is supposed to be the 1897.
Whatever. I mean, I think it's just lazy and dumb. And also, you know how he always jams his cameo in there? He's always got to be in his movie.
Yes.
The part where he's the reflection, he's the dude with the newspaper and that.
Right.
Yeah. One of the least, this is funny to say about a movie like this, one of the least believable things about this movie is that the other cop could just sort of sneak in there and steal stuff in broad sight.
you mean the stab wound medicine?
Yeah.
Because I need some stab wound medicine.
Yeah. It's medicine that repairs the lacerations to your small intestine.
Right. Exactly. It's great.
It's instant. Just spray it on.
We got stab wound medicine left.
Okay, so
that's
this
the
is
real twist. Yeah.
This is where Scott and I have to play really, really nice. So I've seen this movie. I've seen this movie maybe 20 times.
Oh my gosh! Wow. What?
Really?
Why would you have seen this 20 times?
Lost count a long time ago. It's in this short list of movies that I just put on whenever I want like that the sort of like mood, you know, those movies that includes is like Dances with Wolves. You know what I mean?
Right.
And
Dunbar.
another one is Shawshank Redemption.
For,
you know, like the,
for
where
me
the,
is. For me, it's Prometheus.
Okay. But
I don't
but
know
anyway,
why. I've, seen like, this, okay, whatever.
I've seen this movie many, many, many times. And I originally, when I first saw it, I like everybody else on the planet, I was saddled with all the expectations of his first 3 films.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really disliked when Ivy runs into a wall and then goes over it and she's on a road and a Jeep pulls up. And then they go to see the director of the film, or the one guy, I guess. I really disliked that. That was like the whole crux of my complaint was this whole thing. And then I as I watched it many, many more times, I started to see that this was actually kind of like Stephen King's the things he has to say about being the author of his own stories, where M. Night Shyamalan, his character literally says, "This is a sweet gig I've got going here. Don't mess it up."
Yeah, no, he
and,
yeah,
and
I that, get
that that started as I thought about that. I realized he has to say that. I couldn't come up with other alternate lines that didn't make it worse. Mm. You know,
yeah. The thing with her, it's also mean what happened to her. Like the dad sends his daughter, who's
blind.
on a trip of like constant
with
horribleness.
With a bag of rocks.
Yeah, with a bag of magical rocks.
These will protect you.
Just so they can get the stuff. Like, you know how you do this? Since they know, okay, since William Hurt knows, get your ass into the thing, get over the wall and do it yourself, old man.
I'm
realizing that, like I say, we have to play nice because I've seen it so many times and you haven't. I've thought about it a lot, this movie. And I realized that is a take on religions, specifically new religions like Scientology. Mm. That's that whole part of the story where they made a promise and now they're bound to it no matter what.
The elders,
you know,
can never return back to the town.
Yeah. Right. And
send the blind girls.
But they've got an insane amount of money at their disposal. What what could possibly separate you from, you know, from doing the easy right thing? Oh, your crazy belief, this belief that you just invented and, you know, that you made a whole community around, you know, right.
They hold their protection of innocence higher than their children's lives, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Which is dumb. So, yeah. It's freaking dumb. And I understand that's a fun, I like the idea of exploring cultism and exploring people doing things that, why would they do that if not for a collective belief? And that sort of stuff is interesting to me. But this was just lazy version of that, in my opinion.
Like,
feels like they're not really, they didn't really focus on that. You know, when the big reveal came.
I wouldn't say it's lazy. I think all of Shyamalan's movies are very simple stories that he elongates and dances with and makes beautiful. I mean,
I don't know. Just, this one, he elongated it, but then he poked it and then farted on it.
I want to ask Scott. It's been a long time since I've talked to somebody seeing this for the first time, so I really want to know, Scott, what did you like? Like, what about this movie did you want to see more of, or something?
Okay, so I am traditionally, historically, a M. Night Shyamalan apologist. I really like the movies I really like. I think Unbreakable is one of my, it's in my top 10 movies ever. I love Unbreakable. Mm-hmm. I think
you
Sixth
can basically
Sense,
describe that in one sentence.
Yeah, and I think Sixth Sense was an incredible film for its time, and I think that Signs did this whole twist thing better because the twist was separate from a compelling movie. So,
again, I don't think Signs had a...
No, I understand that. I understand.
Signs is a mystery thriller where you don't know whether it's aliens or not for a long time.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. That's why I like that movie better, because that movie is basically two movies. It's here's a mystery thriller about possible aliens, and we're going to do that for most of the movie. And then here at the end, we're going to kind of throw in this twist that's the head-scratcher bit.
Right.
But other than that, It's a cohesive alien movie. It's actually a movie that's a little freaky, a little scary, a little fun, a little whatever. Mm-hmm. And this is just a lot of, oh, thine bucket doth run cold. Come to the thing.
Oh, come on. It's just, look.
Now, to answer, I want to answer Randy's question, though. Let me answer Randy's question. So your question is, what did I come away, what redeeming thing did I find in this?
Like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. My first impression was, ooh, I'm going to like this because this cast is great. Look at all these actors I love. Yeah. This is great. Brendan Gleeson, I think, is amazing. I love him. I love Sigourney Weaver. I want to see all these people. So that, I mean, even Harelip, I was excited to see him again because he's cool.
Oh,
but wow. That's me and him. That's what I call him. It's fine. He calls me tiny.
It's fine. It's fine. We're buddies. It's okay.
He
it's...
calls me tiny penis. So we're even.
Okay.
We have a thing.
I got excited about that, but I think they were all kind of abused and not very good in this. So that was dashed. The other thing I found
I just want to go back to like the very beginning. The first thing you see in the movie is this crowd of indistinguishable people, and they're standing far apart from a grieving father. Brendan Gleeson is kissing a small pine coffin. Did that like move you? Did that interest you?
Well, I mean, no.
Okay. All right. Okay.
I mean, it's not that. I saw it and went, okay, what's this? But I don't know. They didn't really take that to a place that made me go, oh, how satisfying. Like, I don't know. It just felt like a bunch of hemming and hawing, and it felt very like, oh, look, we're a town that's obviously.
Blade Runner really did a number on you.
No, for other movies.
It really did.
It's like I watched this. So I watched the movie. I watched it about 1.5 times yesterday. I watched through it kind of here and there. Oh, yeah. And then this. And then I sat and watched the whole thing from beginning to end. And the second go where I'm going to watch the whole thing from beginning to end, as soon as I see Brendan Gleeson grieving, I started crying. It was just the music and the way it was shot from like the top of a ladder or something. I was lost. And so I do think this movie, the story of your taking this movie in, is about expectations. I really do.
Maybe.
No, I think that was true across the board. I remember when this movie came out, I saw it at the theater, but I was expecting, you know, prior Shyamalan films, but I also was sold in marketing that this was going to be a supernatural story and we were going to meet these monsters and we were going to do it just, you know, we're going to have this monster show, and instead it's like, psych!
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah, no, right. I mean, that's the point of it, but
Is he,
yeah.
is Shyamalan basically now a victim of his own surprises?
Yes.
I mean, basically, you go to an M. Night Shyamalan movie.
He said the worst thing that ever happened to him was The Sixth Sense. Like,
yeah, right. Because now everybody expects, all right, where's the twist, M. Night? And you're always looking for that one thing that's going to be like, oh, he turned the knob, he turned the doorknob clockwise instead of counterclockwise.
Right. Here's a twist. I'm going to make Avatar really bad.
Yeah.
That for a twist.
Yeah. the last Airbender thing was the exception because there was no twist in that, and it was just poo from top to bottom. That is a terrible movie. I mean, I'll give this credit in that it's certainly better than that. This is way better than The Happening. I mean, there's definitely movies that he's made that are worse than this, but I don't think this is anywhere near the top. I mean, I wouldn't put it in the top four.
Shyamalan does something to me that is unnatural. Shyamalan does this to me every time I watch his movies. He drags me along for the ride, and I go, and I feel I just have this wave of emotion. And everything he does, even in The Happening, he's just capable of setting up a scene with the visuals and the music and just everything. The vision he is able to bring that vision so clearly to the screen. I buy in every time.
And sometimes sometimes he does it really well. Like Split, I still haven't seen Split, but by all accounts, it's amazing.
It's less Shyamalan-y to me, if you ask. I mean, if I watched Split and you said that was a Shyamalan film, I'd be like, wow, really?
Well,
was,
maybe,
yeah,
maybe
it was really well
trying to reinvent himself.
The typical Shyamalan formula. I mean, I'd rate this, for me, I'd rate it above Signs, I'd rate it above Lady in the Water, but well under things like Unbreakable, Sixth Sense, Split.
Right? Yeah. Oh, really? You'd like it more than Signs? That's
I like it more than Signs, yeah.
Wow.
What a great body of work he has, though, that you can sit there and...
No, I mean, look, he's got his place, and he's taken a lot of heat lately, but like Split being a big success and critically as well was important for him. The big twist there is that the movie takes place in the Unbreakable universe and that the next film features called Glass is back to Samuel L. Jackson and everybody doing their thing. Yeah. That's very exciting to me. Like, I'm really happy for him and I want that stuff to succeed. I think that's where his time is best spent.
For sure, you don't watch The Village and then go, wow, I hope he makes a Village too.
Yeah.
Definitely does not happen. There.
No. Especially if you
should make one called
Town.
Town.
Ooh,
but it's, I keep talking about the town.
Towns. Yeah. Can we talk about their weird English?
Sure. That's the other problem I have with it, is I wish it was a little more authentic sounding. It all came off as super stilted, and I understand.
You mean it sounded like people from the 80s talking
times.
Like people from the from the 1890s.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah,
it did. It didn't sound convincing.
I get what he's going for there, and I think it's clever and smart that people, you know, that he portrays them this way, because you would have immediately gone, there's something weird here, if they were saying dude and awesome.
But, right.
But they have this, there's this whole story, I guess, that explains how their language evolved. You know, they had kids, they had to teach their kids how to speak, and they ended up in this place where they have the old shed that is not to be used and those we do not speak of and the bad color and the protective color and all of these things, like, where you're just like, how can they stand not just calling things, you know, by their names? Why do they have these...
Well,
not
only that, it's just an empty thing. They're going to eventually, these kids are going to grow up or they're going to have their own kids. Eventually someone's going to rebel, get out of there and figure it out. Like, it's just lost errand. It's dumb.
Well, even that, I mean, you know, you got to figure at some point, one of the elders is just going to get kind of irritated with some of the other elders' bullshit and say, oh, that's it, I'm done.
Yeah.
See, that was kind of the question, because there was a defector elder. We just don't know who it was. They never really answered the question.
I'll tell you who I think it is. It's this lady.
I am fond of it.
I'm very fond of it.
Oh, gosh. Cherry Jones is so amazing in this movie.
I love her, but she's weird in this.
And Sigourney Weaver does this thing in this film. And again, I've seen it too many times, guys. Sigourney Weaver does this thing where she presses her lips together and acts without saying a word. Mm-hmm. And it's just amazing. There's a unrequited love story between her and William Hurt, who's married to someone else.
Yeah.
And it comes to a head when all of their plans are falling apart. And he, you know, comes to tell her what's happening. And she just wants to comfort him so bad. And he walks off and leaves her there. And the camera just lingers on her. Mm-hmm. And it's like, great acting.
Yeah, that stuff was all right.
Why can't this movie justify
Yeah. She's one of, and she's one of the best things about the Netflix Defenders series.
No, I haven't watched it yet.
Who she's in here has watched it yet?
She's the villain.
Oh, out of the new Marvel things, I've got to say, I watched The Gifted and I watched The Inhumans, and I was like, I was surprised what I thought. I was shocked that I actually enjoyed The Inhumans more than The Gifted. Why?
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know why. Too. I can't explain it.
Yeah, I really like The Gifted. I'm waiting to see what happens with Inhumans before I say I'm in or I'm out.
He likes the big CGI bulldog. You're really into
I hate do you how they did Lockjaw.
Really, I enjoy Lockjaw, except for the smearing effect they use. But I'll tell you, I'm having more fun.
Part of it I like.
You like the smearing?
I like the teleport effect. That I think is something you don't see. You know, you haven't seen that kind of teleport effect before. Right?
Yeah,
but I mean the whole fish out of water. Yeah.
Well, listen, you know what? Cherry Jones just said what she thinks of Inhumans.
I am fond of it.
Okay, great.
That's all the defense I need.
Yeah.
Come back to these older middle-aged actors in this film, like Sigourney Weaver and Brendan Gleeson. I feel like they are doing so much better than the script requires. Like that it's a really good explanation of what's wrong with the film. The script just doesn't rise to their level.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. They class up the
Written
joint.
By Shyamalan.
They class up the joint. He has a lot of clout as a guy with three very successful movies before this, where he can get big star talent, and they get they went from Bruce Willis to Bruce Willis again to freaking at the time he was not so reviled by Hollywood, but Mad Max was in there for the Signs deal, and then. And then you got these big actors
Joaquin Phoenix.
This
is his second straight film,
right?
Shyamalan.
Yep, he's still coming off. What was he? 4 years after.
Wahlberg.
Here's the thing, though. Here, let's get back to conceptual, though. I cannot in my head. The twist just made me go, all right. There's a bunch of teenagers there, and this is the year. They're literally the actual modern day year that these people exist in. Is the year World of Warcraft is launched. Do you know what I'm saying? Like it's 2004. These kids should have been in the theaters watching The Incredibles and playing WoW all night. They shouldn't be out there going, doth thine morning shine brightly upon thine butthole?
Let's go play the stump game.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is like that. That is a huge subject. This whole thing about, shouldn't people living in Papua New Guinea right now have access to Starbucks? Like, you know what I'm saying?
No. Wait, who's arguing for that?
Right. Yeah. Who needs a Starbucks?
I can see them having access to stab medicine, but I don't know about a Starbucks.
Sure, but you know what I'm saying? Like, there's a world of people who are living minus all of these comforts and all of this knowledge that we have, mm-hmm. right? And that's one of the many little things this movie raises or doesn't. It might fail to raise that.
Yeah, it should raise it well. I'm just not sure it did. But I don't know, man. I just can't. You know what else ruined this for me? Forget about Blade Runner for a minute. I saw The Witch like a month ago.
Right.
And The Witch is set in a similar setting. Except it's the actual setting. It's like an old-timey, we're pilgrims.
It really does take place back then. What the twist would be if that one took place
No,
back.
Kidding. But their language in there is so authentic. It feels so like what but it would have been.
But I think there is a point to that. I mean, I think there, I can't remember if it was Randy O'Brien who said there's a point that like, it does sound like somebody who has a vague understanding of how people talked back then would remember it. Like, it'd be like, if you all of a sudden wanted to create your own little secluded area where only people spoke Klingon, mm-hmm. right? You'd be like, there's Kapla and Gach Block and
Honor. Yeah. There's Honor in there.
Honor. But I was more reminded, I haven't seen The Witch, but I was more reminded of things like Handmaid's Tale, which is a modern thing, but has that
formality,
sensibility and stuff.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, and I really, as you know, I love that series. I thought that was an incredible achievement. But in this particular case, I'll buy this argument that they were trying to sound like 2004 people mm-hmm. trying to do this thing and make it their reality. and then, but not really knowing the language or not really knowing the cadence. I understand that.
I've read The Crucible 27 times. I think I know how to talk
right.
Like this.
And I understand. And also, I'll take that as an explanation. But to me, it then therefore made it come off as amateurish. And before you know the twist, you're just like, well, this is just kind of badly portrayed 1800s. Like, this is not, this is like, I don't know.
It's a fair point. It's a fair point.
Little House on the Prairie.
I want to hear another angle because I feel like we're like we're beating this to death. This movie has some moments of levity, like serious comic relief that
so
just
good.
I just love so much. And my favorite is Judy Greer as a, you know, 20s spinster goes and declares her love to Joaquin Phoenix as a stoic freaking wood chopper. And then, gets louder and louder until she reaches the point where she's asking him to tell her that he loves her too. She's demanding that he does. And then there's a smash cut to her bawling.
Sobbing,
Beautiful.
And it's beautiful. There's something so funny about it. And I just wonder how Scott took that.
I didn't laugh at all. I thought it was dumb. Okay. In fact, I'm a big Judy Greer fan. Let's talk about her for a second. I think she's great. Love her in everything she ever does. I thought she was terrible in this. And I thought the crying bit was annoying and kind of fingernails on the chalkboard for me.
She's supposed to be a little bit on the side to make you really root for Bryce Dallas Howard. You know, she's basically put there to make Bryce Dallas Howard's character look more sympathetic and make you appreciate the younger sister more, I think.
Sure.
Right.
And I guess I know the age thing is going to be different for all of us because Randy, I think you're, you know, a little bit younger, but does it blow anybody's mind that she's younger than most of us?
Bryce Dallas
Howard. I always thought Judy Greer was older than me.
Right. Really?
Oh.
I can see that.
I hadn't really thought about it. I don't know what I thought before that.
Yeah, I thought she was probably
she does
like
look
five
like
or,
an older person. Yeah.
5 years old.
She plays a little older in things. I mean,
she does.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, when she was an ape in Planet of the Apes,
she was an ape. She looked really old,
She looked really old, right. All hairy and everything. But she's 70.
She's born in 1975.
5 years younger than us. Yeah.
For whatever weird reason, I loved this movie called Kissing a Fool in the 90s. Mm. It starred David Schwimmer and Jason Lee, and it was like Jason Lee's Jason Lee's time when he was making these movies with people that were just weird little rom-coms, and Judy Greer has a bit role in that, and so I saw that several times, and for me she's stuck in there, and I actually thought she was like 16 in that movie.
Oh,
she's
really?
She's actually more like 22 now that I look it up, but I've just always thought of her as really young.
Yeah, I like her a lot. I just think she's really, really poorly portrayed here. I don't think she's good in this.
You know who looks like an alien in this movie?
Who?
Adrian Brody.
Yeah.
Adrian Brody.
He kind of always looks like an alien. I find I like him too. I think he's interesting, you know, like as an actor. I find him
best performance in the film for me, although Bryce Dallas Howard does a fantastic job. She's not given the best part of the script. Adrian Brody as a mentally handicapped off the chain kind of sudden the first big twist in the film is when he's got a knife in Joaquin Phoenix's stomach, like that whole thing he's just amazing. Like I'm actually surprised. I was looking it up. He didn't get nominated for any acting awards coming out of this film, which he's amazing in this movie.
That's because the movie's poo. They didn't. Nobody goes. Oh, look at this movie that is really objectively terrible. By the way, Roger Ebert calls it one of the worst films ever made. I'm not saying I agree with him every time, but you know, he and I are on the page here together today. But for them, you can't have a movie come out and go, oh, you know, we got to give it to so and so for being in Dude, Where's My Car? Like they don't do that.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yes.
Plus,
I don't know her name. What's her name? Won a freaking Oscar for My Cousin Vinny.
That's a good movie though.
Marissa Tomei.
That's a good movie.
That movie wasn't shit.
That movie was good. I mean, it wasn't a great movie, but
speaking of Brody, does anyone else find it just amazing that the two people who are most unlikely to not walk around in circles in the forest both managed to get pretty deep into the forest and find each other.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah. These are the two people that I would think probably would get to the edge of the forest and probably just go around the perimeter not realizing that they're
but it's also what it's away. Also it also undoes the premise, like you were saying, because obviously the reason he can find her is because she's wearing a bright yellow freaking cloak. Well, like, yeah, you could see her from miles away. And that, oh yeah, you realize, oh, that woods, those woods are actually aren't that deep.
Hmm. Do you know where they are? Where were they getting all their food? Because I know they had some livestock, but where were they getting?
Oh my God! How many people live in this village, and how do they keep all those oil lamps burning all the time? Yeah. I would like to know.
Yeah, yeah. There's that a lot too. There's logistics questions about this movie that will haunt.
Logistics are not. Yeah.
Drone.
Hey, Scott. Scott, how did you feel about the knife scene when Adrian Brody stabs?
Okay. So, Joaquin. So that I appreciate you guys reminding me of the scene. I thought that entire sequence was really well done. I think it's some of Shyamalan's best work are these very
personal,
shocking stuff like that. That is it may be, and this is funny as I'm ripping on this movie, it may be one of the cooler versions of that sort of exchange I've ever seen.
Stabbing.
Yeah, because usually it's like you walk up and you go, oh, and by the way, you wouldn't just stand there and make a face. Like you would buckle, you would immediately have pain and recoil because that's what your body does. You don't just go, oh, what's this? I look down and see.
I do have a big gaping painful hole in my stomach.
It did set in stone how stoic Joaquin Phoenix's character is.
Sure. I thought he was the star of this thing. Not really. He sort of disappears.
No, he's in bed most of the
time.
Yeah,
he's not really there. Well, I was going to make a comparison. I won't.
His crowning moment of badass is actually the scene before that where they think they're under attack by those we do not speak of. Mm-hmm. And he is rushing over to be with Ivy in the cellar.
Great scene.
I know, because it's got this whole thing where you don't know what in the world is going to happen as she's standing in her doorway hoping that he comes to her. Mm-hmm. And the music is what makes that scene so great. But it's also like Joaquin Phoenix, it just looks so amazing as he takes her hand and takes her downstairs.
Yeah. Pulls her in, yeah.
The music swells. Her vulnerability as a blind person, having her hand stuck out just blindly out there hoping that he will show up before the monster. I mean,
this is clearly not bringing Scott around.
I like that. You guys are talking about stuff I liked in it, because there are, I mean, yeah, like he has a style. Like I say, I'm usually his apologist. I like the way he does things. It's just, I don't think that the core story here is any good. I think that he's got all the dressing that he usually does, or at least tries to, but that stuff feels so empty when the story beneath it is contrived and short story-ish. It's just not, this isn't like a good short story. It's like a what if moment that you have in the bathroom and you never do anything about it. You know,
what if,
you know what I mean? Like that's my biggest issue with it. Whereas, you know, Unbreakable was like this, it's similar. It sparks with an idea of like, what if people are heroes? I don't even know it. And what if being a superhero is a much more gritty affair? And I mean, everything you're talking about and describing are all the things I loved about Unbreakable, those same approaches to scenes and characters, and I love that stuff, but it just didn't work.
And the difference to me is the fact that when you leave Unbreakable, you keep thinking about the possibilities of how far it could go. With The Village, you end and go, eh, that's dumb.
Mm-hmm. Well, also, you saw Unbreakable first, you have Unbreakable's expectations on you.
Well,
instead of the other way around.
Sure, but I also saw Signs in between, and I like that fine. And, you know, it's just, for me, it's like, well, all right, we're getting a Shyamalan movie. What are you going to get? A twist, and that's and some cool cinematography and some cool directing. Now the question is, does the story hold water? Is it a strong enough story to carry it? And in this case, I don't know. I never saw Lady in the Water. I saw part. I haven't even seen the entirety of The Happening. I've only seen a piece of it on cable once. I can't even really speak to that until we've filmed Saga probably.
What's happening?
But I feel like nothing since Signs for me has really done it, and I need to see Split so I can get back on the train.
What have you seen since Signs? Did you see Devil?
Nope, just The Village. That's it.
Okay. Yeah, and I haven't seen, I hear good things about The Visit.
Oh, I haven't heard of that one. What's that one?
Yeah.
a couple kids go see grandma and grandpa, and they turn out to be, there's a twist.
Just stopped with that.
All right. I mean, he's obviously still making this stuff. I just, you know, like everybody else, there was some disappointment period there, and Avatar was real bad. Oh, yeah, I have seen that. That's horrible bad, like terra bad.
But I never watched. Is that something that somebody who's never seen the cartoon could watch?
No.
Better fit if you'd never seen the cartoon.
It's really not. True story. It's really not good. And it's not just that the cartoon's great, because the cartoon is great. But the movie is just a dismal piece of it's like a little piece of poo smeared on the side of a stall in a Chevron bathroom. Yeah.
Okay.
It's not good.
So there's something else here for me. I could do a whole podcast about the music in this movie, and especially about where they came from to get here. You know, the short version is that, you know, this is the fourth of four movies, and the you know, each score leads from the previous ones. Mm-hmm. And you actually have the numbers of those four movies in the score. So like when you see Signs, the third movie, James Newton Howard's score keys around the number three, and you hear da 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 like that.
And
this film, the scoring, the music goes from 4/4 to 6/8 time, and those are both four beats, even though 6/8 time uses triplets. So it's beautiful and brilliant and so forth. And you just reminded me when you were talking about these other movies that we heard this week, just this week, that they've started principal photography for Glass. And this week was horrible in our lives. Like this week, I will never forget this week as long as I live because of what happened in Las Vegas Sunday. And the news, usually I would read the news and it would say, you know, Variety says that M. Night Shyamalan started filming Glass this week. And it's coming out in 2019, and I would be really excited, and I'd be like, "Yeah, James Newton Howard probably gonna have another score, and what's it gonna be?" But instead, I'm like dreading it. I'm just like, "I don't care." You know, like watching this movie yesterday was like an exercise in just feeling bad for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, it's your 20th viewing. You might want to back off.
Might want to pace yourself there. Yeah. Just
might want to take it easy. That right. thing that makes you feel.
Yeah,
bad.
I mean, that is the case with anything like this. I mean, you know, the 9/11 stuff. I was talking about this on TMS. How it felt so long before things got quote unquote normal, and you weren't thinking of things in the frame of what happened in 9/11, right? Mm-hmm. You were like, oh, I'm at this cool Oktoberfest thing in the wake of 9/11, or I'm on this trip to Australia in the wake of 9/11.
Yeah.
And and all these things that would just feel like, ah, oh, this is, you know, so cool. There was this frame, this unremovable frame around it, what had happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this movie, watching it this week, really exemplified the PTSD aspects that I don't think I would have paid much attention to if we'd recorded the show a week ago.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I don't know. Who knows? But here's the here's the bottom line. We believe in M. Night Shyamalan's ability to entertain us. May he ever do so, and do it in ways that are not like The Village. Okay? That's all. Also, they use that font you hated a bit, I noticed. They have the caps, low caps thing. What's that called? I always forget.
Small caps.
Yeah, you're not a fan of that.
I'm not a fan. It's the hardest thing to read. It's been proven that if you want to slow somebody down and make them read something slowly or read it multiple times, you do it in small caps because they're forced to like parse through each thing to try and figure it out. Whereas if you do something in like a upper and lowercase serif, that's the fastest. And if you want somebody to read something quickly, you give it to them in that and they can digest it a lot quicker. Yeah. That's why I hate the Klingon speak in Star Trek Discovery because it's in small caps.
Yeah. It's
trying to slow me down. I want to read and get on with life.
Yeah. Exactly. It's a bad font. Yeah. I'm with you. Back in my typography classes back in college, they were reviled. Nobody liked them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I totally understand.
What did I see recently that actually really, like something brand new that actually used Comic Sans? And I couldn't believe I was seeing Comic Sans in something new. It was a trailer before Blade Runner, something, I think.
Oh, really? Wow. I didn't see the trailers you saw.
Theater or something. I don't know, but it was something. One of the things I forgot to mention, by the way, that the only thing that actually did get any critical acclaim for this film, for The Village, was the soundtrack. Score by James Newton Howard. Dallas Howard.
James Newton Howard. Not no relation.
I know. I'm just just throwing a bunch of Howards in there.
Yeah,
did get nominated for an Oscar that year.
He's always good. That guy always freaking delivers. Mm-hmm. It's always amazing stuff, and you never hear a bad James Fig Newton Howard.
And this is the best. This is the pinnacle, as far as I'm concerned. In my deep score collection, I have this top 10 easy, maybe top 5 of all time scores. The mood it sets is like no other. I can't name another score that has this thing, that, you know, this violin, this emotional catch.
I have a new one for you. Just everyone should be checking out.
Let's see if anybody can guess.
I don't want to talk about it too much because I'm about to go see it. So let's just.
Yeah, we won't.
I'm so glad you enjoyed
we
it.
We won't, but you're going to love it. All right. Well, a couple of funny, I think, trivia bits. I'm going to call this first one fake. M. Night Shyamalan put the entire cast through a 19th century boot camp in order for them to get a good feel for the time period. Whatever.
They've all talked about it. Like, really? If you watch the extras on the DVD, they all talk about it.
But what was the point of that? Because they didn't really convince me any more than they would have. I mean, come on. Just put on some clothes and be there. You don't have to.
I think
right. Yeah.
I think it was.
If you need something like that to get into the role, you got a problem.
I think it was mostly for the benefit of the younger actors. Is the impression I got that the older actors could sort of had a body of work that they could draw from, but the younger actors, you know, had spent their whole lives in a big city.
We're struggling with this Jesse Eisenberg kid. We got to get him more into it. What can we do?
I hear Jesse Eisenberg actually had to use Facebook for 5 years before before The Social Network so he could get into character.
Oh, that's good. He had to like so many posts and that sort of thing.
He had to like.
Bryce Dallas Howard and Judy Greer, they play sisters Ivy and Kitty, would later play sisters Claire and Karen in Jurassic World.
Here's your Village 2. Oh. Think of Village 2 as your Jurassic Park world, and now that blows your mind on Jurassic Park.
Dude, freaking life finds a way, dude. Life finds a way.
And now, guess what's coming out next year? Jurassic World 2. Mm-hmm. Yay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, I like that first one, okay. It was dumb, but it was fun. I had a good time with it. The movie was originally called The Woods. But James Woods was a dick and said, no, he didn't. It says,
that'd be great.
There was another movie in the works in 2006. It was already scheduled, so they had to change it, made it The Village.
It was called The Wood.
It says Sigourney Weaver suffered nightmares for 2 weeks after reading the script. I don't know how we'd know that, but whatever.
What?
That's what it says.
You're not convincing me. The lady who is Ripley in Alien and Ghostbusters is going to read The Village and have nightmares.
Yeah.
Get out of my face.
She has hovered lovingly over Bill Murray. I couldn't think of his last name. She knows what
Bed. She's been hovering over Bill Murray's bed lovingly.
And I mentioned this film is included in Ebert's most hated list. I wanted to read you guys the other movies in his most hated list, okay? This is just a quick list here. Roger Ebert says, among his most hated films are these alleged comedies. That's his words, not mine. Joe Dirt, North.
What? That's a great movie.
I love that movie.
Joe Dirt is... I understand what he's saying, but Joe Dirt is supposed to be bad. You know what I mean? Yeah. Yes. It's hard to put it in here. But anyway, One Woman
the
or Two.
Paul Blart Mall Cop.
The Hot Chick. He really doesn't like The Hot Chick.
Objectively bad movie.
It's pretty bad. Deuce Bigelow, European Gigolo. If you see a connection there, you're not wrong.
It's Rob Schneider, period.
Baby Geniuses. Now, Brian Ibbett, I want you to brace yourself for this one. Mm-hmm. Spice World.
Didn't like Spice World. I'll let that one slide.
It's a reminder that Roger Ebert was an old man for like his entire life.
Well, it's a reminder that Roger Ebert saw so many movies over the course of his career that the highs were extenuated, were exact, were
They were like, extraordinarily high.
The highs were extraordinarily high, which made the lows extraordinarily low. Sit through Gandhi and ordinary people, then all of a sudden, Dude, Where's My Car feels like you'd rather be doing anything else in the world than watch Dude, Where's My Car?
Well, especially when you're an old curmudgeon and movies aren't movies don't feel like they're supposed to just be fun, mm-hmm, you know?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Sometimes you apply too much importance to this stuff, but mm-hmm. He also lists Catwoman, The Guardian, Ben, Stargate, 13 Ghosts, Constantine, Critters 2, The Main Chorus, Deep Rising.
These are all on our upcoming list, guys.
or ones that we've recently watched. Yeah. Deep Rising, you said, Constantine.
Yeah. He has two of the Resident Evil movies on here.
That's the list we should be pulling from. That's our new mm-hmm. film sack list.
Oh, there it is, The Village. Here's what he says. To call it an anti-climax would be an insult to not only climaxes, but to prefixes. It is a crummy secret. He says it is a crummy secret about one step up the ladder of narrative originality from It Was All a Dream. It's so witless.
I don't ever want to hear Roger Ebert and climax right. in the same song. Yeah, because all I can visualize is him giving two thumbs up.
He says it's so witless, in fact, that when we do discover the secret, we want to rewind the film so we don't know the secret anymore.
And that's exactly what I'm talking about, the weight of expectations. Ebert is just so overloaded with expectations, you know, and he can't just enjoy the story and the music and the visuals.
Mm-hmm. He did put on here, by the way, and this is where he and I absolutely go our separate ways. He believes The Usual Suspects is a terrible film, and it's on his least favorite list.
Wow.
How can you do that? Maybe he just doesn't like twists.
That's in my top five.
Maybe he doesn't like twists. Maybe that's the deal.
Maybe he had bad experience with a twist when he was young.
Yeah. Aren't we doing Hellbound, Hellraiser 2 soon? Isn't that on our list this month?
Yes. That's next. Yes. Hellraiser 2 is coming up.
All right. Why? He says, well, I won't read it now, but he really hates that movie. So we'll do that one soon. That'll be good.
I wish I could rewind and go back to a point where I didn't watch Hellraiser or Hellbound.
Just rewind time till you didn't see it. I like that idea. It's pretty
but
good.
But he also really like he also wrote, what was it, Beyond the Valley of the Dolls or something like that?
Yeah.
Or,
yeah. And that was garbage poo.
Cast no stones, my friend.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like glass house.
That's right. It's like Billy Joel throwing stones at glass houses.
I want a trope alert on one thing.
I got one right here.
I love the whole thing where the kids go sit on the watchtowers at night and they play game, like they play stand with your back to the danger on the stump and this kind of thing. But man, movies really key too much on the idea that and as teenagers and young adults, kids are exactly what you made them to be. Mm. It ain't true. Mm. It is not true. Kids will never be what you try to make them to be. And this movie is just filled with them. There's not a single rebel in this entire group.
Yeah, the most rebellious they get is that. Yeah. That's it. They don't really ever. I mean, that's my whole point. That's why it's also unrealistic. Right. These kids would have long ago found that wall. They would have long ago seen a paved road. And all you're asking for is just complete shock. It'd be that lady that ended up on the Enterprise in First Contact. And she was like, holy shit, what is this? Well, that's our planet. And she fainted or whatever. It'd be like that. I don't know why that's my example, but you know what I mean? Fish out of water kind of deal.
Well, and sooner or later, you can pay all the money you want to keep people from getting into your nature preserve. Sooner or later, there's going to be somebody with more money who says, I want to pay to see what's on the other side of that wall, and I'll pay more to have you fly me over it.
Yeah. Plus, in a more modern context, here we are this many years later, there are too many technologies that would have revealed it. Yeah, drones alone.
How many drones would be going over village?
Yeah,
the village.
Those are the drones of the people we don't speak of.
Where were we at in 2004 with Google Maps? It was a thing, right? That was a deal.
Not really. Right. It was coming along. You know, like Google Earth is a couple of years later, and that's when everybody kind of finds out about it.
So
Google Maps was just in San Francisco.
Right. Mm-hmm. but there had to be satellite, you know, like all this. That's just horseshit.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
You can see one on the wall in the guard station.
Yeah, that's true.
A satellite picture of the nature preserve.
So there's a different trope. This is called the Hidden Elf Village. Mm. The Hidden Elf Village is just mysteriously unseen by the rest of the universe that's passing by all the time.
Yeah.
And we we struggle with it when it isn't given its due, right? Yeah. So in Star Trek Insurrection, the Baku homeworld, they go to great lengths to explain why it is a hidden elf village, and you buy it because they have taken the time to make you understand that.
Yeah.
And this film, that is supposed to be a pleasant surprise, so it doesn't take any time to explain it to you. Mm-hmm. You know.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of elves, Jesse Eisenberg, I think, was underused here. I mean, if he could have been like a neurotic side buddy to Joaquin.
Speaking of elves, Jesse Eisenberg.
Yeah.
Am I right? Well,
no, I agree, but he's also, I think this is 04. We didn't know who this was. He was just a kid.
Right. He would have been great if he had been in that neurotic mode and trying to talk Joaquin from not leaving. Don't leave, man. Come on. Don't do it. You're going to screw the whole thing.
Yeah, every Jesse Eisenberg character since.
Good point. Yeah, he could have totally. I completely agree. And speaking of him, if you count him, Sigourney Weaver, Joaquin Phoenix, M. Night Shyamalan, Adrian Brody, and William Hurt, they are all either Oscar nominees or winners, depending on which ones you're looking at. Mm. I mean, this is a huge deal. Mm-hmm. And that's the other disappointment for me, is I feel like they were a huge deal thrown at not a huge deal. Like, this should have been a bigger deal. And I know there's plenty of examples out there of movies with incredible casts where the movie just blows. Like, what's that Tom Hanks one? Bonfire of the Vanities was a piece of shit.
Well, yeah, that's well known as like a the massive disappointment. Ishtar, you know, I mean, there's the road to great movies is littered with the skeletons of things like that. Right?
Yeah, totally. So yeah, like, you know, mm-hmm. give me it's funny. I wonder. I don't know if this is true or not. I just wonder if I would have liked this more if it was a bunch of unknowns, faces I didn't know.
So.
Mm. Or if you'd seen it in 2004, but hadn't seen the previous M. Night Shyamalan films.
Maybe.
That's a question I would really like to, I'd love to talk to somebody for whom that was the experience.
Yeah, that's a fair question. I mean, yeah, probably that's the problem with his thing, is that once you've done it and then you do it again, mm-hmm. then you're like, oh, here comes the pony. It knows one trick. And that's trouble. That's trouble, right? So I don't know, man. I do watch The Witch, though, if you want to see a cool thing about the woods and not going in there. That's badass.
Did this redeem William Hurt from his previous Lost in Space sacking? Or is this just pounding on top of it?
One more banana peel on the trail to...
I mean, I like him. I just don't know. We haven't had good luck with him on FilmSack, have we? Everything we've seen him in... Maybe it's only been these two, but
I don't see us watching something like The Accidental Tourist or Broadcast News on FilmSack, unfortunately.
No.
Nothing.
I've never seen Broadcast News. I always hear it's great. Mm-hmm. That and Network. I always hear Network's great. Like these old
Network might be a good one for FilmSack, because enough time has passed to where there's some things in there that it's a great movie, but there's some things in there that just might be kind of cornball in today's modern media.
Yeah, maybe. But I also hear it's currently a pretty good allegory for a lot of what's happening in the media right now. So I've never seen it, so it's on my list of shame, and I probably ought to at some point watch that. But anyway.
Shame!
And I just wanted to, one more final thing I want to say about the cameo by Shyamalan is it's his worst one. It's his reflection in a freaking medical cabinet. It's shitty.
Well, that I kind of like. It's very, that's so Hitchcock, right? Like,
right,
for sure. Have an innocuous place, and if you blink, you kind of miss that it's M. Night Shyamalan, and like, oh, he was in that? Oh, that was him? And
but the way they played it up by only showing the back of his head, it was so purposeful.
I will say this. It kind of, I forgot that was him when I saw it. It kind of took me out of the movie for a second because it MacGuffined me, because I was thinking, oh, there's something about this guy. I must have forgotten this, but there's something about this guy. We're going to turn around and it's going to be William Hurt's twin brother or something. There's a reason we're not seeing this guy's face.
I had the same exact impression. And I hadn't seen it before, so I had very much that impression. That's because how they filmed it. It's like having a camera slowly creep up on you from the back and not know that when you turn around, something bad's going to happen.
Shyamalan has this whole thing on his extras where he talks about placing himself in a film, and he doesn't think he's a very good actor, but he wanted to be an actor so much. Like, he's been trying to make movies since he was a little kid, and when he was a kid, he had to both be director and actor, and he doesn't feel like he could ever reach the place where he could be good enough to be carrying a movie, but he still wants to be in the movie. So he does this thing and then he immediately regrets it. Mm. And I'm like, you know, I kind of regret it too. I think that whole thing goes off better if Scott Johnson isn't thinking, oh, there's the director.
Mm. Like you're spending the movie playing Where's Waldo? Where is Hitchcock going to appear? I mean, I was right, right. The way you did it.
Mm-hmm.
Dude walking down the street with a little dog or getting on a bus or, yeah. The before and after Slim Fast kind of picture, that sort of thing.
Sure, like the Minority Report, you get a brief shot of because they did a network, they did a director swap in that where you got to see what's his name from Vanilla Sky, and then
Vanilla Sky had a cameo
from Spielberg, and like right. I kind of am okay with those because they're brief, quick, get out of there.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't like where it's like, oh, every time, because I don't watch every Spielberg movie and expect to see him in it, like ever.
Right. Oh.
So why distract me with that? Just don't be in it. Just don't do it. We don't need an Indian guy anyway right now. Just
and maybe.
Wow.
I'm just going to back away over here.
What I mean by that is, it makes him more distinct. I mean, like it or not, it does. It makes him, you look at him and you go, oh, that's not just somebody. That's the director because I know M. Night Shyamalan is of Indian descent. And that's totally him. And like, it's impossible to not be distracted by it. It's got nothing to do with, well, it has everything to do with race, but nothing to do with race.
Unless he's working tech support, you're not buying it.
No, I don't mean that. I mean, don't even put him there. Don't put him anywhere. Like, just don't do it any more than I'd want to see. Like, George Lucas would be a terrible cameo because it's George Lucas with his turtleneck up to his girdle, you know, like looking like George Lucas.
How deep are you going
to
dig this hole, Scott?
No, for real. Like anybody who is,
should we send somebody in or just let you keep going?
Anybody who is uniquely themselves, like visually, don't put them in a cameo. It's bad. That. It's a bad idea.
Yeah, because
need Bryce Dallas Howard in a yellow outfit to get to push Scott in the hole.
This is why I am anti Stan Lee cameos. I hate them. Because I'm always looking, it's always gonna be Stan Lee. It's never gonna not look like him. It's never gonna not sound like him. Yeah, it stops it. Makes you go, oh, yeah, we're in a movie here.
I feel like one of these days, I'm sad. I mean, I'm already sad for it. We're going to lose Stan Lee. And the first Marvel movie that comes out after that where we don't get a Stan Lee cameo, I'm going to be so
bummed. They're totally CG in
him. Yeah, they'll CG him in there.
They will, yeah.
Yeah, and also, don't forget, like, he makes an appearance in Big Hero 6. This guy can just be drawn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. But yeah, it's the same. It's actually the exact same problem I have with him doing his own cameos and Stan Lee too much. It just takes you out. It's like, oh yeah, you're making a movie. That's funny. Like, I don't know. I find it annoying. I don't like it.
I'm with you. But before we go to quotes, and I can't wait for the quotes because they're crazy. I just want to talk real quick about the colors in the film, because I wonder if for you watching this the first time, if as the movie was going, you were noticing all of the missing colors, and if you were starting to attach colors to things, or if it was just not done well enough.
I don't know. The blue and the red thing never really sank in for me. I mean, I just was
It was yellow and red, and there was almost no blue in the film except in the sky.
Oh, I thought they said blue. I thought somebody had some blue things that were protecting them, and it was a good color. Am I mixing that up? Was it yellow good?
Yellow.
Oh,
yellow.
All right. Yeah. That's fine. Why is red always bad? Come on, guys.
Because it's on the inside, right? Yeah. You don't want it to be on the outside. You want to keep it on the inside. Right.
Yeah, but a big goof. I read all the goofs before watching the movie this time, and I was like, what? There's a kid dressed in red at the wedding? And then I went and looked. It's not that much red, but it is a goof. They do let a kid wear a little stripe of red in the wedding shots.
Mm. Yeah,
but it's a red wedding.
It all looked very cold and wet all the time, which I'm not a huge fan of. Pennsylvania fall sort of early winter stuff is not my favorite look, but I guess that's the point.
We just watched a movie about the Amish, right? Yeah. Is that what we just watched?
Yeah. It was an Amish movie. Yeah, here are the Mennonites, here are the Amish, and here are the regular. Here are the only two security guards for 300 miles around. Right. Listen to what I wrote for my notes. Normally,
all it would take is one disgruntled security guard employee, and the whole thing falls apart.
Yeah, or even just somebody who wants to have a little bit of fun and likes to throw his Walkman over the wall every once in a while or something.
Right. Like, well, they don't know about the people over there, but
that's true.
You'd see some disgruntled employee be like, "I'm totally going to hop over the fence and take a dump on the the grounds of the preserve, animal preserve. Wait, there's people walking around in there. What's going on?
They're
going to
burn you like a witch because you've got a radio and they don't know what that is. They think you're some kind of creature.
Blue jeans.
Blue jeans.
And stab medicine.
Yeah. They need to all be blind. Stab medicine.
I am still a fan of this whole thing.
Yeah.
Especially because the movie starts with a lot of green. It's not yet autumn. Mm. And then autumn happens and everything starts getting more bleak looking. And it gets bleaker and bleaker until you have your principal actress literally running through a bunch of trees that look dead and everything is completely brown. And then she goes over a wall and the first thing you see is this bright green Jeep. And it takes you back to that feeling from the beginning of the movie. And I might be putting more symbolism in than the movie, you know, intends.
You?
But
sorry, please but, continue.
But it's a visual medium, and why not? Like, you know what I mean? Why not give some power to that? It's not like it was an accident of that these colors came in.
No, and it is one of the creepiest things. The woods to me are that's one of the problems I have, or not problems, but one of the things that scares the crap out of me with like Blair Witch, you know, the feeling of that confinement and these prickly pokey things that you're running through that does freak me out. Yeah, like those Pennsylvania woods up in New Jersey, I walked through an area like that and just freaked me the hell out. So I could totally see that. I totally get that as being very, very scary.
I agree.
And she's blind.
Sure.
So there's a whole other thing going there where she can't see what, so you may as well not be seeing anything either.
Yeah.
So really all the colors are taken away. Mm. And then when she finally meets somebody, you're back to color, you know, for you. And, and you have a sense of relief that she is now perceiving more like,
well, look at the upside. If she's running through that forest blind and she pokes her eye out, no real loss, right? It's fine.
How could you, how could you walk through that forest as a blind person and not just have your arm in front of your face to prevent a branch from going right into your eye?
Yeah.
I couldn't do it.
Yeah. I don't know if I could do it either. All right. Now, before we get to clips, I want to actually, this is unique because I usually have very thoughtful notes about a movie. And I want to read, these are each one line each separated by a space, so double spaced notes, and I want you guys to hear them because this will tell you exactly how I was feeling last night. Here we go. Hell of a cast. That's line number one. Mm-hmm. She looks like her director dad. Line number two. The Witch is 1,000 times better than this movie, and it's spooky as shit in the woods.
Nice.
Then I went, ugh. Then I went, poop movie. Then I went, also his worst cameo. Also, these people are crazy. Also, this movie is shit. Those are my notes.
Well done.
Yeah. Pretty good, right?
Wow.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
All right. That leads us to clips. Clips are here, and they are ready for us to play, and they begin with this.
I am fond of it.
Just kidding. Not her. We've been her already.
Yeah.
I don't like bee noises, and here are some bee noises. They're flies, I guess, but I don't like them.
Yeah, the fly noises were weird for me because they had this huge banquet outside like two or three times a week and no flies ever.
Yeah.
But you scan a little rabbit and there's like infestation.
Yeah, the worst fly infestation of all time over one skinned rabbit.
You know what? I don't get that because that whole area is supposed to be a no fly zone.
Yeah. That's pretty good. All right, Ripley speaks.
We do not believe our boundary has been breached.
You know
those
I mean.
We don't speak of are much larger creatures than coyotes. And we would know if they had been here.
In the 1800s, nobody uses conjunctions or consonants.
We all talk like data.
Yeah, I will never shorten a word. I will always use all of the words.
The word you were looking for is contraction.
Oh, I meant contraction. I say consonant. That's not what I mean.
Yeah, Shyamalan actually said that he went over the script multiple times to make absolutely sure that there were no contractions in it.
Yeah, I think that's what everyone thinks is how you do it, but I don't agree. All right, here you go. Here's some bad dialogue.
The young man is unaware of your intentions?
He has a quiet way.
He has a quiet way.
Lame. It's lame. Come on, it's lame. Here's a, again, she's here's Greer again doing the cry thing. I think it's terrible.
I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah,
it's bad.
That makes me, it's yeah, not, that, I, it made me smile.
It made me frown hard. I went upside down on my frown.
I had, his frown hurts.
I had what you had, but it was completely flipped around. All right, here's crazy cry sounds. Oh, these are just weird sounds she made, a couple of them, one of them. All right, there's that. This is her crying. Oh, here's Brendan Gleeson doing his thing.
I often wondered if you and my son bonded because neither of you was fond of speaking. You're very kind.
It's nice to see his son doing so much cool work now, too. That gives you Doom Hall
gives you the that
oh,
that
Gleeson. Yeah. Oh yeah, wow,
he's great.
That sequence tries to give you the idea that there is more story that maybe didn't make it into the film, and I'm just like, whoa,
yeah.
That what if there's another 30 minutes of stuff?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what I thought too. But he was underused as always because that guy's great, and you should watch In Bruges if you never have. Because
yeah, and you should watch Mr. Mercedes.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And that's on a channel I don't have. I got to figure out a way to get that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the Stephen King book that I read that I love. You read that too, right, Dunaway?
Yes, I did.
It's fantastic. Non-supernatural King. Series. Just straight up like detective story. It's awesome.
Can I give you my favorite Brendan Gleeson?
Yeah.
It's a smaller, much smaller role than like in Bruges. Scorsese's Gangs of New York.
Oh yeah, he's great in that.
Oh, that is good. Yeah.
Yeah, you got to hire that dude.
I've been meaning to give that a second chance. I watched it years ago and I was like, this is stupid.
Oh, I love Gangs of New York. It's really good.
I just feel like I need to give it a second chance.
Yeah, really that's good. A good idea. Well, listen, if you do that, I'll give The Village another chance in about 10 years. Okay.
Wow.
Here's some
like that's generous.
Here's some gibberish for I don't know what reason. Here's gibberish.
No cheating.
What a deeply scandalous thing to say. I insist you take that back. Is that the school bell?
Okay. There's no pausing there. What is your meaning?
What is your meaning?
Okay. I'm going to use that all the time. So
beep-bop-boop. I don't know.
Beep-bop-boop.
What is your meaning?
What's this? I don't know what this is.
There are secrets in every corner of this village.
Oh, all right.
Okay. Including that one outfit they keep under the floorboards.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're doing with it.
Yeah.
I think
why don't they keep that in the shed?
Yeah.
Like, how are they going to put that on and then walk out the front door to like act like they're coming from the woods?
Right. Yeah.
I was inside the whole time.
Yeah. We're led to question whether Joaquin Phoenix's character knows more than he's letting on. And he's just a quiet, stoic person.
Yeah.
And where that really comes from is when he goes a few feet into the woods. He sees something. It doesn't scare him because he's not scared ever, but we don't know what he sees. And it might be that he knows the entire secret that the elders have. It might be.
I don't know. He hot hoofed it pretty quick back. It's like he's like a child. It's like, I don't want to believe. I'm not believing in this, but maybe I believe a little bit.
But I still say, like, the movie didn't make it right. Like, the movie could have led us on farther because Joaquin Phoenix ends up getting knocked out of the story, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's unconscious. Mm-hmm. So we could have asked that question more, and the movie just doesn't get to it quite right.
Yeah, I agree.
Do we all assume that he lives? Do we all assume that?
Yeah, because she came back with magic water, and he's good now.
No way.
I mean, he shouldn't live.
Stabaway. It's the market brand is Stabaway.
He shouldn't live. If you guys have played Resident Evil 7, the healing liquid in that thing is literally you pull it out and pour it on your arm. That's what that reminded me of. It was like, oh, the miracle cure for being axed to death is to pour a little miracle water on your arm. Here's some bad dialogue for you.
Sometimes we don't do things, yet others know we want to do things, so we don't do them.
Oh, my gosh, dude.
Which is hysterical because he's trying to quote what she said to him, and he gets it all wrong.
But not hysterical. It's bad.
But it's very funny.
Because he's not reading it from a script. He always has to read his lines from the notes. Yeah, right?
It's bad. Okay. It's bad. Here's a creepy way to say all that.
My older sister is now spoken for. I'm now free to receive interest from anyone.
Whoa. Easy there.
Receiving some interest.
Interest. She's like a bank.
Say I've got a chance.
Yeah.
Would you like to make a deposit?
That's my status on Facebook, right?
Let me see what are those tubes called? Let me see your tube. that I send my bank receipt through. What's that called? What are those called?
Fallopian tube?
No, the things with the
vacuum tubes.
The vacuum. What are they called?
Pneumatic
tubes. I'd sure like to see your pneumatic tubes. Was the joke I was trying to make? Didn't happen. All right.
Let me take off your deposit slip.
Here is a head mash I just recorded. This guy knocked his head on the thing. That's all that was. Okay. Here's a short, hard laugh. All right. That's fun. All right. And then there's this. They did a lot of these.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. Weird, right?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Sell those to Skrillex. Have them make a mashup.
Mm-hmm. Here's, I wrote intense.
You answer me right this moment.
Oh, yeah. That's her just freaking out. And then here's the slap. Adrian Brody getting his first slap over the face.
It's an easy face to slap. You're right, Dunaway.
Yeah, that goes right up there.
Happened.
Yeah.
I'm right up there with Tyrion slapping Joffrey on this one. It is really iconic. I don't even know among slaps in TV and movies. I don't know what else goes in that category.
I don't know. I like
that's why I called it a face banking, because it wasn't really a slap. A slap is kind of like pop.
Yeah,
this is more like face spanking.
She was
Davis
all in
getting slapped in Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, I think, is, you know, the only one ranks higher. Than
I like
one.
The one at Strange Brew where Max von Sydow smacks that guy in the basement, gives him the three slaps back and forth. That was pretty good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but none sounded like this.
Isn't there a slap in like Casablanca or something? Or it's Gone with the Wind.
Any romantic movie that's black and white, the ladies mm-hmm. would get slapped. I mean, that's going to happen.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Calm down, woman.
Yeah, you hysterical.
You're
woman.
You're hysterical.
Too painful, not cannot bear it. What? Oh.
It is too painful. I cannot bear it.
I love it. Wow.
I forgot I did that. What's this? Anyway, here you go. Oh, it's her breathing again. All right. Then there was this sound. Okay, well, listen to one more time. Ugh, what is going on?
What's happening there? Did you write down context?
She was swallowing her. She was out freaking out in the woods, and I think it was just like a swallowing or something.
Just trying to swallow to gather up courage to go forward.
I guess so. What does this person say? Here you go.
Where is he?
Okay, I'm going to try that again. Let's see what she says. This is the lady who comes in and sees that the floor is opened up. Okay, so here you go.
Where is he?
What?
I don't know what she's saying.
I don't know what she's saying. She's losing it. And that was like, okay.
No one's wearing the thing.
That's not what it is. It can't be that, can it?
I think it's where. I think she's asking, where is he?
Okay, let's try it again.
Where is he?
Okay, so she's like, what is this? Yeah, where is he? Okay.
Yeah.
But it's not the right way to do it, I'm getting at. That's terrible.
Every movie she's in, she reminds me of my Aunt Barb.
Oh, no. Aunt Barb.
100%.
All right. It's enough of that. We're going to now jump straight into the Film Sack checklist. Oh, look at this. It goes a little like this. Stilted, terrible dialogue. Check. Two movies that have sucked the William Hurt in them. What? Oh, two movies in a row. Two Film Sack movies that have sucked with William Hurt in them. Check. And then finally, The Forest Where Tim Burton Goes to Write Poems. Check. All right. Star Trek stuff. Tommy Germanovich Jr. was a dancer in this, I guess during the dance scene. Played Foursquare in the 2009 movie, which is weird. Joey Anaya says, those we don't speak of. I guess it was one of those dudes. Performs stunts in several episodes of Star Trek Enterprise. Also First Contact and Nemesis. And then finally, Frank Collision. You need to have him on your insurance.
Name. Yeah, it's got to be a stuntman.
Victor, and he played Victor. And TNG played Gol Dolak in the episode Ends in Row in 1991. So
he was a Cardassian.
Yeah. And one of the early ones. They looked very lizardy in those early TNG introductory days. Soundtrack great. I'm going to give it a G for great. I thought it was really good. That's the best thing in the movie, in my opinion.
Mm. The critics agreed.
Yeah. And we all seem to think we like it. So there you go. Twitter post. This is where you guys sum it up in 140 characters or less, at least for now. 280 coming. Let's start with Randy.
The Village, proof that expectations can turn a perfectly good film into crap. Just kidding. It was the acting and the story that was crap. Just kidding. I loved it.
Yeah. 20, you must love it. 20 times in. You have to love it. That's, yeah. There's no way you don't love it. Also, Brian Dunaway.
Randy again. The Village, like Sigourney Weaver knitting a sweater for a xenomorph. Now that's a twist. And a hook. And a twist. Oh, look, I made a sweater. Knitting humor.
Nice. That's good. All the knitters out there.
I totally got it. Yeah. I thought it was crochet, though.
Yeah, the knitters out there are going to love that. They were going to get emails from the
nitwit
crochet crowd. Finally, Brian Ibbett.
Well, I did a macrame thing, so I'm going to redo that right now. Mm. The Village. Every village needs an idiot. And this one explains the film about halfway through from his place behind a newspaper in a guard station.
Nice. Nailed it. Also, I never thought of it, but he really was the village idiot. What's his name? Adrian Brody.
Adrian Brody. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Well, who was the village drunk? They didn't have one, did they?
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. Oh, what's his face? He lost his. Yeah. Well, what's his face? He lost his kid. Wasn't he about to drink it up?
Yeah. What does it take to start to turn? This is the line. What does it take to start to ruin M. Night Shyamalan's career? It takes a village. it's pretty good. All right.
There you go.
Speaking of dumb shit like that, let's play this. Wrong one. Jeez.
Oh, we have a chicken in the bucket.
Yeah. Actually, do we have a chicken in the bucket? Who qualifies for that in this?
So,
Bryce Dallas Howard almost becomes the chick in the bucket, but she claws her way out of it.
Yeah.
And also it's an M. Night Shyamalan film and he's really particular about his characters. He doesn't do that. Like if he's got a character, he keeps showing it to you.
Yeah.
I feel like maybe Jesse Eisenberg, but that's only because we know him now.
Yeah.
I think, guard who finds, Ivy is, could be a good chick in the bucket because what is he going to keep his mouth shut for the rest of his life? Or is he going to go home that night and say, honey, you won't believe what happened today.
Mm-hmm. Plus he's just there. His Jeep is just there. And so is the ladder at the very end. He's not even to be seen.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay. You know what?
Good call.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
He just,
and we also never said what gross Scott out the most. Is there anything in this one?
I wanted to make a guess.
Okay.
Just because there's something, where so she's out in the woods and she gets covered in mud and she starts freaking out. And for whatever reason, she's just suddenly just playing with it. Like, it's not like she, you know what I'm saying? Like, she's crying, there's tears streaming, and she's just smearing the mud all over her cloak. And I don't know why. I thought of that in a moment. I thought, I wonder if Scott's kind of grossed out right now.
Grossed out. I mean, I'm not one to rub mud on myself, but it didn't really gross me out because there's not, you know, it doesn't really have the sort of like, ooh, disgusting kind of factor going on. But probably the grossest thing for me, yeah, it's a hard one because the movie doesn't really feature a lot of this, but I'm going to say the grossest thing for me was when Adrian Brody is half an inch from your face just kind of breathing.
Yeah. And spitting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Making it silly.
Yeah, I don't like that. It's just like when he stabbed him and he's just kind of like dead face, like right there. It's like, ugh.
Isn't the potential smell of the skinned animals that all these kids are kind of hovering over? And
yeah, that's true too. But then again, those all look so fake to me. I didn't really concern me.
Really? Because I thought that was a very good representation of a.
They looked. It's not that they looked bad. I just knew they were fake.
You knew the kids weren't really smelling decaying flesh.
No, those weren't real animals. There's no way. They can't do that. They're not allowed.
would probably have an issue with that. Yeah,
seems like they'd somebody who get called on that. You can't film your village show in a place where nobody knows where you are and no one sees what you're doing. Like that's doesn't work that way. Alternate titles, I'm going to give it The Spillage. I don't know why, just because it rhymed with village. Howard Dunn Fell Down the Well. Here's your email for the week. Two emails, actually. We got these at filmsack@gmail.com. One from Rob, who says...
Barb.
He says, pretty sure that this was Damian Lewis's real voice in the movie, that British accent that we heard last week in the Dreamcatcher. He says, he's one of the Brits that has an impeccable American accent. So he believes that us making fun of that British thing was really his real voice.
That's his real voice, yeah.
And that he's normally faking the American one.
Perfect example of people in their dumb notes on IMDb. Then he got that British accent by studying Roddy McDowall or studying
But then again, maybe it actually lends more credence to it, because the idea that he was just, I mean, nobody's natural accent is, hello, I'm walking by now. Like, he obviously was affecting something a little nuttier, so who knows.
Yeah.
Phil Schaffran wrote in, says, hello, gentlemen. I highly recommend an awesome documentary I just watched called Score, a Movie Music Documentary. I love the show. It provides me hours of quality entertainment while milking cows at night at a dairy farm for my night job. Thank you very much for your work. Sincerely, Phil. Well, Phil.
Now there's a twist.
We're happy to hear twisting that cow nipple is what he's, that's the twist. I've never heard of that. Score, a Movie Music Documentary. Sounds like something Randy would really like for some reason, because you love them scores.
I've heard of it. I haven't made time for it yet.
Let's see. It is available currently. Oh, this reviewed very well. Came out this year. 92% on Rotten Tomatoes. Looks like it is a what makes a film score unforgettable. It brings Hollywood's elite composers together to give views on privileged look inside the musical challenges and creative secrecy of the world's most international music genre, the film score. I'd totally be into this.
Cast is Moby, Randy Newman, Gary Marshall.
Oh, really?
Danny Elfman, Hans Zimmer, James Cameron, Trent Reznor.
Yeah, just I like just name them all. Like they're all in it.
John Williams, Quincy Jones, everybody. I want to see this. This sounds great, especially after watching. I'm going to say something that's going to surprise everybody. The Hans Zimmer score in Blade Runner 2049 is incredible.
It is.
What?
Yeah.
It's so good. No, they didn't do Vangelis because I think he's dead. Okay, but they sure got inspiration from Vangelis from the original thing. Mm-hmm. And it's beautiful and it's haunting and it's harsh and it's amazing. Oh my gosh.
It evokes enough of the original score to really keep those tendrils connected to the first movie.
Totally agree. Oh my gosh, it's so good. You guys gotta go.
Okay, all right. I was
you should go see it today, Randy.
Okay. I'm still coming down off the high of the Benjamin Wallfish score from It. And so I think I'm ready for something new.
Yeah. So you'll love it. I listened to it all day yesterday, which people think I'm crazy because it's a very discordant sort of soundtrack, but it's so good. Anyway, that's gonna be it. Oh, what's our film sack movie there? Next week.
We are, as you said, we are watching Hellbound, Hellraiser 2. It's our spooky October.
Woohoo! Pretty excited about this. We've seen
Sacktober
the first one.
October continues.
Yep. Time to see the sequel to the already film sacked original of Hellraiser. So that's happening next week. Be here for it. In the meantime, filmsack.com is our website. You can find that easily and comment on our blog and hang out and whatever. Find all the links you need. It's all right there. Filmsack@gmail.com. is the email address to send your emails to. And if you can muster it up, head on over to Twitter and follow us at FilmSack. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Ah.
We'll see you we'll see you next time. Yeah? No? Okay. All right.
Yeah.
It's a slap sound.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com. We did it, Brian. You have plenty of time for beer time now.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.